Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Thanks to Keeps for supporting FilmSack. Keeps makes easy and affordable hair loss treatment for men. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/filmsack.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z! Huh?
You are with me.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another episode of FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. This is episode 436. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian Diggy 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 Da 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 Dunaway.
Diggy 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 Da Da Da. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Sorry, guys. I'm a bit under the weather. It seems I left my window open all night, and I managed to catch a cold. Now, if you could hold on a second, I can't seem to locate my show notes for today. And I know I filed them here somewhere between Con Air and National Treasure, but I can't seem to locate them. Man, if I only had a 30-something secretary with sexy ankles and shoulder pads who lives at home with her mom and middle-aged root of a brother, I'm sure I could find it. Uh-oh. Seems a bat has flown in the window. Shoo! 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 If I only had a shoe to throw at him, I'll just take care of that later. Great. Now I'm frustrated, drunk, and horny. What? You guys aren't still drunk from Saturday night at Ibbitt's house? Shut up, Randy. I know you are. But come on. How'd you get through this week's movie without having someone drive a pallet stake through your heart? Fine. How about horny then? Just me? All right. Whatever you got to tell yourself to crawl under the leather couch at night. There it is. It was under movies that became memes. You don't say. Now if you'll excuse me, I have a bat to fondle.
I like sick Dunaway. I mean, I don't want you to be sick, but I think you're funny when you're sick. Then also with us, Randy, he always wears visible boob covers in his sex scenes, Jordan.
Mm. Aloha, Scott, Ryan. Ryan.
Hi.
Yes. Yeah. Why, yes, I'm talking strangely. Why would you even question that? Have you done the thing that I asked you to yet? Have you? Well... What's so hard about simply putting in the time to do this one simple task? Do I ask too much of you? No. And no, that's not fake plastic teeth in my mouth. How dare you? And no, that's not fake plastic teeth in my butthole either. I have real actual anus dentata. I mean... How do you think I lost 4 fingers at the second knuckle?
Thank goodness this movie was rated R.
Yeah, no
good
kidding.
Lord.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Lord.
Finally with us, Brian, when Nicolas Cage starts to gag in a cab, you kick Nicolas Cage out of your cab, Ibbitt.
For sure. Alva, come into my office. I don't know if I can keep the you know, I keep it up for as long as he kept
piano.
It up.
Yeah. Just do it, Keanu. Come on. That's what it is.
I want you to take a break from looking for the Der Spiegel contract. And how that was slipping into a...
Keanu, I'm telling you.
It is Keanu. It's and help me locate Keanu. Some missing books we need to publish. Howard Portman is going to be coming by the office today, and he's looking for a first proof on his book of nursery rhymes. You know, Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water. Then Jack fell down and broke his crown, and Jill came tumbling after. And when you're done looking for that one, I need you to locate a very important book for a celebrity client. Theodore Giesel is meeting me for lunch tomorrow and wants to see how the editing is going with green eggs and ham. You know, I will not eat green eggs and ham. I will not eat them, Sam, I am! And when you're done with that, can you please track down the Sam Kinison autobiography? Oh, you know, that's the one where he does his bit about solving world hunger. That that bit that ends with, we have deserts in America. We just don't live in them. Tell the Ethiopians to get in. We'll drive them to where the food is.
Oh.
Jeez, nice, deep cut on that one. Nice job.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to think of another screaming author.
Yeah.
Do you think Nicolas Cage was throwing shade at Keanu Reeves at that time?
No.
Because I swear that was
no,
was like
his... I don't think Keanu Reeves, I mean, we're talking 88, so like
was he not Bill and Ted by then?
I mean, he was Ted by then, but was he really Ted by then? Like
No. Nicolas Cage does not have the talent or ability.
Well, I didn't say it was good. I didn't say it was a good shade.
Yeah. Let me actually, that's funny you should ask. I don't know when Bill and Ted came out. We should, that was, Bill and Ted was 1990, so you're right.
Wow.
This preceded that.
I was putting that back in 88.
Wow. I did too. Wow. I had that in the 80s in my head. That's, it does not seem like 90 to me, but anyway, whatever. Mm-hmm. Vampire's Kiss, the one of those movies, if I had to make a list of like 10 movies on FilmSec that belong here, that's on that list, and it might be pretty high up on that list in terms of like the mission, the original mission of what FilmSack was about, which is uncovering these ridiculous things from yesteryear and trying to figure out what they were trying to do. And I can't think of a better example right now than Vampire's Kiss.
As you know, I also I have a similar thing where I'm trying to determine what are like the 10 worst movies that we've seen, like where mm-hmm. we're talking about the film as a film for it, you know, for that comparison with other movies, right? Like, and this is
up there.
This is a good strong entry
really
into
is.
That list.
Yeah,
yeah.
And it has to start and middle and finish with Nicolas Cage. Like, how do you don't have this movie without him? I can't imagine mm-hmm. anyone else choosing to make the movie or anyone with any kind of cachet, right? Like, obviously there's lots of.
No, I mean, you put anybody else in that role and they're going to do it pretty close to straight like you imagine the character should be, right? No weird vocal affectations, no bipolar out of nowhere, 0 to 60 and a half a second kind of responses.
Ooh, 0 to 60. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nicolas Cage, to his credit, and maybe it's the Peggy Sue Got Married stuff or the Raising Arizona kind of thing though he's doing back then, but he's just not afraid to go over the top without any provocation.
Right, you're totally right about that, but it's interesting because you just mentioned, so the other one I would mention is Moonlighting and Raising Arizona came out
just Moonlight.
Or sorry, Moonlight. I keep saying
not the TV series.
Yeah, and I know that if I ever say that in front of Ibbot, he not only corrects it immediately, but exposes himself as a true Moonlighting fan.
Some walk by night. Yeah.
So anyway, Moonlight, rather, came out a year before this, so did Raising Arizona. And those are both really good examples of Nicolas Cage in the right hands, in the right roles, and people walking out going, oh, he was great in that. And then this thing happens, and it's in a world of its own. This is like the worst, best garbage I've seen in a long time on our show. Like, it's so terrible, but at the same time, I felt like I had to watch it, and I would even be willing to watch this again with friends just to have a laugh. Like, it's that kind of movie. But also, I'm half convinced. You know, here's when I think a movie really got under my skin, is when I start to question a bunch of lore stuff. And this movie actually made me do that, despite how stupid it is. It actually made me go, well, now, wait a minute. Was the psychiatrist ever real? Was it always him descending into madness? Was he ever, was the vampire connection kind of real? Because they would lead you along like it was, but then they would nod at the camera as if they weren't. And in the end, right. she does her little thing as the camera pans out and goes back to the city after he helps stab himself. And then I'm still like, was he just crazy? Had he just lost his mind? And that's all this ever was. And right. was the constant secretary abuse. Like, what did that even mean? Why was that even in here? Like, it is. Like, it's a movie that made me think way too much for how shitty it is.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and sometimes, right. sometimes you try to find a purpose in things, mm-hmm. and you forget that the movie is like wildly incompetent. You know, and so like, there's a scene after he's been like absolutely mistreating Maria Conchita Alonso in ways that are like no Office Space would have ever tolerated. Not in the 80s, not in the 60s. But after that has been established, then there's this quick scene in a conference room where he and the rest of the boys club at his firm are all laughing about it. And again, the movie's incompetent, and it depicts them laughing as though they're pretending to laugh mm-hmm. rather right. than laughing. Mm-hmm. And so that alone has you questioning what the hell you're looking at.
Right.
But then you have to take another step back and go, wait, why is that scene in this movie? What is that scene trying to depict, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, well, I guess maybe it's just depicting an excuse. How does he get away with this? Well, because the other parts of the boys' club are fine with it, right? Mm-hmm.
Right.
But man, it's so bad at depicting that simple thing, you know?
Yeah.
But isn't it supposed to be an attack on yuppies from the 80s? Wasn't this a comedy that was supposed to be a dark comedy? And
that never once crossed my mind watching this movie.
I mean, it did.
That's amazing.
It did to me. In a way, like, he was playing this weird stereotype, and by the way, affecting the worst possible combo accent thing.
Like, never in the history of film site could I not, like, am I so anxious to get to clips that I almost want to say, yeah, well, yeah. let's do clips and we'll talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
it's like my simple description for it is, it's like an actor who has gone to acting school and is like last in his class. Yeah. Is asked to do a mid-Atlantic accent and does not know what that sounds like. Is just like make up a mid-Atlantic accent, whatever you think that is. Yeah, that's what this right. is.
This felt very much like an indie film to me. Mm-hmm. It had all the marks of it. It was kind of like, you know, well, what do you think we should do, Nicolas Cage? How do you want to get into your role? It was just, it felt very sophomoric, but
Well, this was the first film by this director. I'm trying to get back to his name here.
Robert Bierman, I believe it is.
Yes.
This is his first big one. He had some TV movies and some shorts before then, but this is his first debut and okay. I think his last. Let me see.
Yeah, he did some other stuff. And for
he did TV movies and TV stuff. No, he did do one called A Merry War, I think.
It's a bunch of British-y stuff. Nice. And he's fine, I guess. I mean, I'm looking at one of the things on his list caught me by mistake, and I saw, ooh, The Walking Dead. He did a bunch of episodes of The Walking Dead. No, he did something called right. Walking the Dead.
Walking the Dead, nice.
In
Waking the Dead.
Or I'm sorry.
Waking the Dead.
Oh, no, this says Walking.
Wasn't he also in Bring Out Your Dead? No, that was just...
Wait, where are you seeing Waking the Dead? I don't see that.
I see on IMDb it says Waking the Dead.
Oh, TV you're series, right. There's no L in there. You're right. Yeah. I read that wrong twice. Well, anyway, I kept putting an L in there. I just couldn't help it.
The reason why it felt like an amateur's attempt to me is because lots of times you'll make a movie and it'll reference another movie very heavily. This references Count Olaf.
Nosferatu thing. Yeah.
Right, Nosferatu. So they almost went to all the weird looks that Nick Cage gives is his direct impression of Count Orlok from that film.
Mm-hmm,
so I mean, I thought it was just him being weird and crazy, which it is, but it was like he was taking a lot of that, you know, that sunken head into his shoulders and, you know, throwing your chin kind of forward and with the big eyes and looking down your nose. He got most of that from that film. So
it is on purpose that he does that. Yeah, that he does affect Max Schreck, and
because that's his influence in his mind.
It doesn't work. It's shit. It's shit. It's terrible.
Well, it works as a meme, but it doesn't work as
memey as hell. Film. Sure.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah. You've got to, and it's something you almost got to say. All right, is this Nicolas Cage doing Nosferatu, or is it Peter Lowe doing Nosferatu?
Right,
which
right.
I think is really the case.
Well, yeah. I mean. So if I'm okay, you guys correct me. This is my takeaway at the end.
Sure, sure.
At the end of it, I got done and went, all right, I'm pretty sure he is, this is just a descent into mental illness.
Right.
Yeah. And he never experienced any of these things, like the lady he's talking to in the shower was never there. The when he was with what's her name, he really wasn't. It's all just that, right? Like, am I supposed to, at the end of this, not halfway there?
Like, I think Jennifer Beals really was a vampire, really did suck his blood.
But I disagree.
But that's interpretation. But he thought he was turning into a vampire. He wasn't.
Right. There's no clear answer, Ibbot. So your answer that you think that that's what it was.
It was left up to interpretation.
Well,
right?
I guess that's the problem. Yeah, not the problem, but that's exactly why I question it. And so you're right. They don't really ever make it positive. Like, they just are like sort of, what if it is or what if it isn't? That might be in his head. It might not be in his head. You never know. Like,
one way to go back and see what is real and what is not real is to go, what is being witnessed by outside characters, such as the small boy in the stairwells? He was watching as his girlfriend went in. That was a real moment. That was actually happening as witnessed by another character. So we know that happened, but things that were happening behind the scenes when we were just in Nicolas Cage's mind, or Peter's mind, those were up for question.
Yeah. Anytime it was just him. I mean, Jennifer Beals, I have no doubt that she was in his life, but I think the part where he's trying to pry her mouth open and so show everybody that she has fangs or whatever,
in my opinion,
that was real, but she didn't have fangs. So my thinking is he just has this different perception of this person, just like you know, he's giving coffee to her in bed and he's shaking coffee all over the bed and there's nobody over there.
I'm assuming that was the girl he was talking about at the beginning, that he wanted her so bad, the therapist, and then when he had her, he didn't want her, and so he was still hung up on her, and that was like part of the tipping point for his insanity. That's just what I think.
I don't know.
So I absolutely believe that the character played by Casey Lemons was real.
Yeah.
And that he, you know, that like marks the beginning of his descent, right? Like, I believe that the bat was real, although the worst depiction of a live animal I've ever seen.
Oh, you're talking about the bat. I thought you was talking about Nicolas Cage's performance was
You know, she has to go through her entire life. I assume she's still around. She has to go through her entire life knowing full well that she had Nicolas Cage had her nipple in his mouth.
Yeah, she's successful as an actor, and later Casey Lemons is a director. She's been directing some things. She directed one of my favorite episodes of Luke Cage, the TV series. Ooh. Anyway, I think she's absolutely real. I think he meets her at a bar. They get to know each other a little bit. They try to go have some fun. The thing that's weird to me is that it's not depicted very well. I mean, that's true of the whole movie, but it's not depicted very well. Why is he doing this ridiculous laugh after he gives up on his apartment and is like, let's go back to your place instead? And they're like getting in a cab. He's doing this laugh. That's like, what is that?
I don't know. That movie's so full of that stuff. It's so hard to get my finger on why that was the choice. I understand it when he was going crazy, but when he was just living and being normal, he would outburst in these weird giggles and laughs all the time. And we were supposed to see that as like discordant, like, ooh, what's he doing? Why is he going that way?
Well, didn't we kind of like see at this point where we kind of like yuppies weren't real? They weren't real people and everything about them was vampiric. And they
were cocaine and the day trading and the
exactly. Right. And their laughs were
singles bars.
Right.
Perrier.
Yeah. No, there was a whole thing, wasn't it? That was a whole vibe.
It really was,
then. And they were playing off on that a little bit, but his decision to just lean into that full crazy and then other moments of like sensibleness. I mean, if you ask me, the crazy person is the secretary because she kept being convinced by him to come back. Why would you? And then as soon as he got in the car, he would turn into a psycho and would be abusive and awful. And I'm like, quit this job, dude. Get out.
I mean, that was some my favorite of that part. Yeah, some of it actually rang true. Like some of that where he's, you know, lying to her and begging her to give him another chance to go out on another date. And she gives him a little bit of consent and then ends up writing a note and leaving it on his door and so on. I was like, oh, yeah, like I will bet you there are people out there who have had an encounter with someone who is just going crazy. And this was the most, what they experienced.
Yeah, this was the most authentic part of the whole movie, being someone who is in a city who is trying to make it, yet is getting this, all this family pressure to keep going, and the people won't believe you that your boss is crazy. That's classic horror stuff and one of the most realistic parts of the film.
And by the way, Casey Lemons in that role did a good job. Yes. Like Maria Conchita Alonso did a good job. She's a good actor doing a good job. And there's all of these little things, right? Like where David Hyde Pierce comes into the movie for one liner, John Michael Higgins, they're all good at these roles where they're acting. And we're like, hey, you had John Michael Higgins on set. Why didn't you make him the lead?
He's the
dude. He would have been great.
No. He's the dude from...
Now, are you talking about Alva? Because Alva was played by Maria.
No, he's talking about... If you're talking about Higgins, he's the dude from Best in Show and Rested.
Yeah, he has one line in a bar. Yeah. He's just a guy.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
He's great.
Now, speaking of Casey Lemons, by the way, circle right back around to that. Mm-hmm. She's been on Film Sack several times.
Yes.
Candyman. Didn't we watch Hard Target with Van Damme?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah, we did. Are you kidding me?
Did, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
No, I don't forget that one. That's one of my favorite movies. I love that movie. Yeah. That's my favorite John Woo movie, I think.
Right.
I mean, they're all good, but I like that one a lot. I have a special spot for it.
So there were a couple of things I wanted to share with you guys because I read a lot after watching this horrible movie. One was the great Hal Hinson reviewed this in the Washington Post in June 1989, and I just wanted to read you two little clips from his review.
Okay.
He said. Hal Hinson said, "This is scorched earth acting, the most flagrant scenery chewing I've ever seen. Cage makes the previous champ, Crispin Glover in River's Edge, look like Perry Como." And then he ends it with, "No amount of description can prepare you for these mad excesses. They have to be seen to be believed."
Yeah.
And it's like, I get it that the movie reviewer's job is not to cause you to not find out for yourself, but they have to be seen to be believed is so freaking negative, you know?
It like, is, but it's also him acknowledging the feeling I had when I watched it, which is this is required film sack viewing. Like, in fact, if you consider yourself like a Nicolas Cage aficionado, you like all his movies, you're into the meme world that he possesses or whatever, you owe it to yourself to see this. You have to see this one because I've seen them all and they've all been pretty weird and Wicker Man was pretty bad. And, you know, you can go down the list of terrible roles and good roles.
I was really missing Wicker Man last night.
This film. Exactly. It's like, wow. Okay. Wicker Man held the top spot. Right. Nope. Not anymore.
Yeah. Not even close. Man. I mean, it's not that. I mean, if you could actually argue that Wicker Man's a worse overall movie, but as far as just the performance bit, like you can't, this is incomparable. And so I feel like I have been remiss in my crappy movie viewing for the entirety of my life until I finally got to see Vampire's Kiss.
The other thing I wanted to bring to your attention is just 3 months ago, a young writer named Zach Schoenfeld, and I mean young, he's like probably younger than this movie. And Zach Schoenfeld also has the worst Twitter handle on Twitter, but that's not relevant. He wrote this.
You can't leave it. Like, you got to tell us what it is.
Oh, his Twitter handle is ZZZZAAAACCCCHHH.
Oh man, sticking it to the man. That's
right.
Raw.
Yeah. So anyway, Zach Schoenfeld wrote an oral history of this movie and published it in June of this year for the 30th anniversary of the film coming out. And you can find it online. It's on theringer.com. It's called Truly Batshit, The Secret History of Vampire's Kiss, The Craziest Nicolas Cage Movie of All Time. Yeah. And it's a great read. It's a long form. It's going to take you a while, but it's a great, great read because he gets into all of the answers to us when we're sitting here saying, why, how did this get made? Why did they, what, you know, it's all in there. So I just want to make sure you guys understand, like, no need to email us and tell us that, you know, these questions are all answered. Like, we're going to ask them anyway, because damn.
Well, at least I can easily find them on Twitter now, so I can go find
So this film, Vampire's Kiss, to me, is kind of what used to happen with photocopies. So, like, when you Xerox something, it kept getting crappier and crappier. Well, Bram Stoker had, you know, it was the original, and then and then Nosferatu was actually Bram Stoker said, no, don't do that movie. That's my stuff and you're not doing it right and it sucks. And then this movie is based off of that. And by the time you get into the late 80s, this is what you end up with.
Yeah.
Are you saying that we're never going to get a Dracula movie that's as good as the first Dracula movie?
I just want to see what's coming next. I want to see the YouTube video based on Vampire's Kiss. That's what I want to see.
Oh, you want to see that carbon copy?
One more. Yeah. One more Xerox, one please. More,
iteration.
One more.
Any of you have a favorite Dracula movie?
Generally, I'm not a fan. I kind of hate it. I actually don't really like most of the old Hollywood versions of any of that. But if you're just saying, well, you know, if you look at just the original Bram Stoker stuff, I guess I'm into that. But like vampire, specifically Dracula, the character, right? Is that what you're saying? Right. Not vampires in general, but just Dracula.
Dracula movies. Yeah, there's a bunch.
Probably, I mean, as weird and as janky as it is, probably the one with Keanu Reeves.
Gary Oldman.
Oldman.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
We watched Van Helsing like a couple of years ago, right?
That's a bad movie.
I wouldn't call it my favorite. It was a really bad.
Bad movie, yeah.
So usually the consensus is the movie called Bram Stoker's Dracula is the
right one.
Yeah.
Right. Which is the one I think Scott and I are talking about.
Yeah. That's the Gary Oldman one.
Just a few years later after this, 1992 is when that came out.
But it's also extremely, that's a controversial opinion. People panned it at the time. I think it's still considered kind of too opulent and
weird. It was a little too dry, right?
Yeah, that, but it was also just it's all the way up in its own butt. Who made it was Coppola,
somebody,
right?
Somebody is touching their microphone with a
plastic teeth.
Oh, there you go.
Is that really what was you were touching?
No, it wasn't me, but it sounded like somebody was.
Oh, weird. I don't know what that was.
Shorting.
I didn't hear anything.
But anyway, I could hear it too. What was I going to say? I forgot. Oh, that movie's just, it's Coppola trying to be modern and it just, I don't know, it didn't work. But it's still the most memorable for me because it's just freaking weird. And I like weird, so I was into that, I guess. But the rest of them, eh. Like, you know, Bela Lugosi and that kind of stuff. F that. Not into that.
I mean, I appreciate it for what it was, a classic, but that stuff does feel like it's a classic. It's revered because of its classic status and not because it's an engaging, compelling film now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I don't think it's just my mind is so addled with a requirement to have action every second or blood or, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I try and watch some of that older stuff and it's like, okay, yeah, it's a classic because it was the first of its kind to do this sort of thing, but I don't think I can watch this stuff now and appreciate it for what it is trying to be.
I think based on the character of, if you were to write the character of a Dracula in modern days, I think you would find Twilight to be pretty accurate. So as much as we may hate that whole thing is kind of spot on.
Well, I mean,
I feel like it just feels like it's the worst eventuality. You know, but Twilight is really, you know, an accurate depiction of what Dracula would be these days. No, I don't want to think.
Well,
that.
Here's the thing to remember about all of it is that it's the problem with vampires in general. I think so. Here, a controversial hot take, everybody. Is that they're too relatable because you have them spouting dialogue, you have them doing exposition like a zombie or a monster or a creature or a ghost or whatever. You don't know what their motivations are. They're coming from a totally different place than you're in. Whereas vampires are just sitting around moping and everyone knows someone like that in their life. And so they just come off as kind of shitty. So I never really get vampires very much. I don't like them.
I don't see vampires as moping like some kind of emo vamp or something, which they kind of do in the Twilight series. But I really see them as creatures of desire, especially sexual desire. And they're constantly trying to feed that.
Yeah, but between feedings, they're just prancing around in their fancy clothes going, yes, I hope you're comfortable and enjoy yourself.
They can satiate their thirst for blood, but not for lust. So I don't think they ever just sit around. They're just like constantly
jacking it.
So,
well, so we saw when,
horny bloodsuckers.
What do you think? What do you think Nicolas Cage was doing when the vampire was not there?
Yeah,
when Flashdance vampire was not there. What do you think was going on with Nicolas Cage?
Well, he was apparently himself. He was making a frappuccino on the side of the bed where she was supposed to be.
Yeah, he was distinctly making the choice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, there were a few things where the movie was actually careful. There was care taken, right? So like all of the scenes in IRL scenes where he's wearing a Band-Aid, you don't find out, does he really actually for sure have teeth marks, right? Like, or scars or whatever would be under there. You don't know. He might just be wearing a Band-Aid on perfectly good skin. And like, so there's some stuff like that, right? But you just can't, like, you can't give the movie credit for that at all. You know, like, it's got the best example of the gross up close up trope I've ever seen. Give me a trope alert.
Oh,
Scott Johnson,
good lord, it's right here. I got it.
Gross up close up.
Give it.
I don't know that I can even name another film that comes close to this. Nicolas Cage ate a cockroach. He not only ate a cockroach, he ate three in the making of this movie. The version you see in the film is the first take. The director apparently was mad at him and made him eat two more. He made him take two more takes, which is just, I'm certain that cockroaches taste bad. I'm certain.
Oh, yeah. No, the best part of that is he made the face one would make exactly the face one would make if they were forced to eat a cockroach.
Yeah, it's an amazing moment.
There was no acting there whatsoever. It was all genuine reaction.
Yeah, easily the grossest thing in the movie. Like, it grossed me out hard because it was real. I could tell it was real. I knew they weren't faking that, and that will win gross. You could have had somebody get a fake severed head later, and I would have gone, meh, so what?
Yeah.
It's fake. I know it's fake, but.
Yeah. I can think of some gross up close ups that were fake. You know, like in Something About Mary, there's a gratuitous shot of the beans and the Franks caught in the zipper.
Sure. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not like this. This was so real. He really actually did that. It was just amazing.
He put not just a little bitty cockroach, not some, bread for taste cockroach. It was like a big, nasty, hissing,
buzzing. I can really do it. Oh, I can breed one.
Where did they get three of those? And even when he's fumbling around for it, I was getting all goosey. It was, my gosh, that was gross. And I'll bet in his head he's thinking, I'm doing it for my art. It's for my art. Right.
This is so method. De Niro would have done this.
And that's why he's such a freaking weirdo. Like, he can do something, completely 100% awful like this movie. And then he'll turn around and make something great. Like, what was that about with him? Why is it still a thing with him? He'll occasionally do this now where, he's just paying the bills with like this piece of shit one after the other, where he's just doling out like garbage, and then he'll suddenly be in a thing and you're like, oh my gosh, that movie was great, and he's a huge part of the reason why.
I don't criticize actors who just play in everything, because I think some people just love to act. I can't say he's ever had a want for money since he's made it.
I think it is the shotgun approach, right? I think it's not that he's like, all right, now I'm going to do a good film. All right, now I'm going to do a Con Air and make some money. I think he says, oh yeah, I'll do it, whatever. And and it's just throwing everything at the wall. Some of it sticks, some of it doesn't.
But why him yelling in Face Off, I'm Castor Troy, isn't stupid seemingly. I mean, it's a little over the top.
Oh, I disagree.
I think it's a director that is willing to try and rein him in, or
knows how to control that chaos.
Or refocus it. Yeah, exactly.
I think you're probably right.
You want to do that over the top thing? I have the perfect scene for you to yell that over the top. But don't do it here. Let's do it. Let's save it for another spot.
But to dispel the idea that he was never want for money, I mean, he's famously in the last few years was like insane debt. Like out of control debt, and had to sell old comic books to make money. He had to be in every possible movie role, no matter what someone offered him to pay it through. I'm just saying that this is not a guy who's like, I'm just going to go act for the love of it. This was a guy who got in a lot of trouble in the last 10 years and had to pay his way out of it. So,
Even in the 90s and aughts, you can see him making like not really making decisions for the sake of his career. Like, he's clearly like he's choosing. There's some awesome badass roles, right? Like Con Air or Lord of War, right? But the guy he's also like, I mean, on paper, National Treasure has no right to be a series, much less, like even a single good film. And it's like, he's doing what so many people do so much better, you know, mm-hmm. than him, but he's taking it and he's getting a lot of money for it. Mm-hmm. And that has to make you question what acting in Hollywood actually is it an appearance,
right.
More than an actual, you know, set of skills. Not saying that great actors don't have great skills.
Yeah.
Just questioning whether or not famous people get to be famous people in movies a lot more than they deserve.
Maybe. I don't know if he's in that case, that thing or not. Because like I said, I think there's some things he's been in that are really good. I mean, don't forget, this is an Academy Award winning actor we're talking about here. He is one.
But again, he's on that those lists of most obnoxious Academy Awards, right? Like where people are scratching their heads and saying, did we really give an Academy Award to my cousin Vinny? Okay.
Yeah, right. No, you're right. That happens. Like, you know, as much as I really like her now, my cousin Vinny, what's her name? George has a crush on her. What's her name?
Yes.
What Carter?
Oh, jeez.
Marissa Tomei.
My Generation Z daughter had to shout it across the room just now because I couldn't remember it because she's... right. Oh, you're a millennial at 22? I don't know how that works. Anyway, she's...
You don't know how millennials work?
All
right.
She's awesome, and I like her in lots of things. She was really good in The Wrestler. She's great as Spider-Man's aunt. Like, all that stuff's good. But yeah, like you walked away from that, or the one with Halle Berry's the big one. Like she won, and then it's just been nothing but kind of garbage since she won. Like she did Batwoman or Catwoman during that time, like post awards, and you were just like, really? This is where our Academy Award winning actress
this is how you reward us for giving you
right. There's always those examples.
Academy Awards have always been ebbed and flowed with quality, just because you've only got so many movies to choose from each year, and you've only got so many actors, and sometimes it's a dry year.
Where do we all stand on the big 94 controversy? Because 94, you had Red Dead Redemption. Sorry. What's it called? My brain.
Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption. Jeez. Shawshank Redemption. You had Pulp Fiction, and you had Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump ended up winning, but man, did people get up in arms about how those other two films should have won.
For sure, Shawshank.
Any other year would have been a no-brainer, but I mean, Forrest Gump really just...
I don't know, dude. But really, do we look back on that the way we do those other two films? I disagree. I like Forrest Gump for lots of reasons, but I think Shawshank should have taken that thing.
Right. Like I said, any other year, Shawshank would have totally just steamrolled.
I just get irritated with the whole coincidental part of Forrest Gump. That's the part that just breaks the movie.
There was
for
a lot
me.
More.
It's like the beginning of the third Indiana Jones movie, where everything that happens to make Indiana Jones happens in a 2-minute train ride.
Right.
And you know, he hates snakes and the whip, Forrest Gump. He gets a hat, and he gets a scar in his chin.
Forrest Gump was not only just how you play someone with a mental handicap; it was also something that was the beginning of deep fakes, right? I mean, now we've got it was this totally
back then. There were shallow fakes.
Yeah,
they were. Fakes.
They were horrible fakes.
It blew our minds like Jurassic Park. I mean,
have you seen it lately? Though, have you seen? I mean,
like I said, yeah.
It's very
Jurassic
early.
Park, when you look back, it's like, oh, it wasn't that great? But back in the day when Jurassic Park first came,
totally right.
No doubt in my mind.
But if you watch those like president lips as they're talking to Forrest Gump, you'll go, oh, geez. Like today, they would kill that. It would look so good now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And also, 94 was still when they were only doing 5 films for nominees.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Right.
And I'm certain that if you replayed it now with the people who are in Hollywood now. And these were all new. This is all like new stuff. That quiz show would have been a much, much higher contender.
I love quiz show.
Such a great film.
One of the best movies. It made me be in my top 10 ever. I love quiz show.
And back then, you know, Robert Redford was Robert Redford. Now he's a legend. You know what I mean? And I just think it's a different story. And a movie like Shawshank Redemption now isn't taken as seriously.
Well, that's because people are insane, because that's a great movie.
Well, I mean, exactly, how much, yes. Right? How much do they really balance it towards the public? Because I mean, you can have an award show, but if you pick, you know, eccentric critic choice movies every year. I mean, won't people just
I think that's what the People's Choice Awards is more towards than the
Golden Globes.
The Golden Globes.
But everybody suffers a little bit from that popularity thing, right?
No, because I agree.
If they bypassed all the greats every year that people just love, like Forrest Gump, eventually people will be like, nah, I'm not watching. Why not? Well, they always pick some kind of highfalutin crap. I don't want to see that.
No, there's nothing, but there's nothing wrong with... Ibbot has ruined Forrest Gump for me today, because I actually really like Forrest Gump, but now that you mention it, this coincidence stuff does suck. Yeah. I hate
it. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, he invented Shit Happens, and he invented the happy face, and he, you know, foiled Watergate, and he, right.
But that was the point of the movie, though, right?
It
was
that point of the movie. Yeah, I don't like that stuff.
Yeah. You know what? Like, oh,
he touched
so many
lives. Oh, all right.
He touched every life that was convenient for this film to show me. Like, Isn't
that true of every film, though? I mean.
No, this is in particular. No, most movies don't do this where they're like, oh, he talked to Nixon, did he? Oh, and then he talked to Gerald Ford.
Well,
interesting.
Well, it's like this. Okay, so we know that Forrest Gump is the narrator voice of everything that happens to Forrest Gump, right? So, I mean, of course it's going to be Forrest Gump-centric. I mean, that's just the point.
Yeah, but what they're trying to do, they're trying to get us emotionally. That movie was meant to do that with Jenny's passing and with dealing with Bubba Gump and the whole freaking, you know, the Vietnam stuff and all that was supposed to
it was a decades film. I mean, it was like, okay, what happened this decade? Let's hit the touchstones.
Yeah, it was all of those things. But to have him, when it went off the rails is when he took the guy's shirt after he ran really long and wiped his face with it and left a mud stain that looked like a smiley face. that really annoyed me.
And I think one thing you have to be talking about when you're talking about these movies, and I'm going to put Vampire's Kiss at the beginning of a long list. There are movies that are about someone with a manageable condition. And Forrest Gump has a manageable condition. He has a low IQ. And it just goes on and on and on every year. And they made fun of it in Tropic Thunder, right? This joke about how you have to, in order to win Oscars, you have to depict someone who is not too broken, but they have to be broken. And a Beautiful Mind wins an Oscar. And it just, it goes on and on. And Forrest Gump is a great example of that. That is never going to stop, by the way. That's not a time limited thing. We will always see people making these movies about slightly broken people, not too broken in different ways. Mm-hmm. Vampire's Kiss is just so bad at doing it, you know?
But we all can relate to that because we all think we suffer uniquely and that we're all broken, so we relate to these characters.
I'm definitely broken.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You all think you're broken. Yeah. And you want to see somebody rise above that.
You're right. I just this movie couldn't decide whether it was trying to be just bad or an art exposition.
It was definitely an exploration in art,
like the weird, like explain those freaking mimes outside every time.
The mimes were a reflection of, was a question of, are they actually there, or is this the struggle that he has as he goes home?
See, now I'm questioning whether everything's real, because I don't think, now I'm saying, like, you know what, everything, she probably wasn't, Jennifer Bills probably wasn't a vampire. Like, I kind of put that as, well, no, I know that now. Now you've got me thinking about that.
I don't think she was a vampire either, but I guess what I'm saying is that supposed to be brilliant that Ibbot is confused? You know what I mean?
Like, it's supposed to be brilliant.
Did they
not
get you?
Even, but
did they get you?
I like a movie that I think about for a long time after, but I don't know if I want to think about this movie for a long time after. Right?
This is what I saw from it. The city was breaking this Philadelphia kid, who, by the way, I don't know anybody in Philadelphia that talks like Nicolas Cage does in this movie.
No.
But he'd been in the city for 10 years, and he was like a sponge and was absorbing.
Wait, was that Philadelphia? Because they kept showing the two towers. It looked like New York to me. It's not New York.
It was New York, but he came from Philadelphia, according to the character's dialogue in the story.
Okay, gotcha.
So he said he'd been there for 10 years. And so anyway, this reflection, he's absorbing all this trash. And so it reflects that fight of spitting and punching. Reflects a fight that happens later on in the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's just what I took from it. Doesn't mean that it's right. Like I said, this film is definitely art meant to make you question.
Yeah, I mean, that is what they were trying to do. Whether they succeeded wildly or not, maybe that's up for debate. But maybe it got a weird wedge in, you know, like it right. kind of got away with it in a weird way that I did not expect. Because I do think it's just inherently bad. It's just very bad. But yeah. also there are right. moments of it where I go, oh, no, what? You're just talking to nobody out there. There was there ever a psychiatrist? Like, they know how to pull those right, strings, and that, right. that got under my skin.
Were there ever mimes in front of his apartment? Oh, my God.
Yeah. So that's interesting. By the way,
I think the mimes were real.
In 2018, so just last year, he did a GQ interview, Nicolas Cage did, and he says this is his favorite movie he ever did. Now, he's either lying or
no, I bet he had more fun with this film than anything. He probably couldn't believe they let him do it.
Okay, check this like out. Said, oh, go ahead, Randy.
I've just, it's all in this article called Truly Batshit, The Secret History of Vampires.
I'm going to go read it.
It's all in there.
I got to read it. I mean, that's again, a weird power of this thing, because I actually feel driven to read that. Like, why?
Yeah.
I've seen lots of bad movies on film.
That's why it's a cult classic. Is,
yeah. I guess you're right.
There should be no tasty morsels from watching this film.
No.
Yet, there you are.
There they are.
Chewing on your roach.
Yep, there I am eating the roach.
Right. Right.
All right, I want to give some credit to, okay, it turns out, you guys, I don't know, I mean, this last week was kind of confirmed, but then we got an email that double confirmed it, that somebody listening to the show, possibly multiple people, are going to IMDb listings for the films we're doing the following week, and they are altering trivia in our favor.
There's a direct path to all film sec films.
Yep.
And the IMDb.
We've recognized we've recognized the pattern. Somebody got called out. They actually admitted to it. They sent out an email. I shared that with you guys. Brandy also got it on Twitter, I guess. And anyway, I want to do a little fanfare here for the following two posts on this IMDb trivia. Here you go. Sylvester Stallone was considered for the lead role.
And then three spots later,
John Travolta and Arnold Schwarzenegger were considered for the lead.
Oh my God.
We are getting trolled.
IMDb,
so
you gotta
hard.
Do better.
Keep this up is what I'm saying. I don't care what IMDb does. This is great. Like we are hacking the system here, and I
right
love it.
Exactly
we're leaving a scorched earth.
Right, exactly. It's great to a degree, but please don't take it too far.
Like, no, this needs to be subtle. We want it to be subtle. We're leaving a
Planet Hollywood sized swath behind us in our trails.
Right, we want it to be a small thing that will go unnoticed, so that in 20 years. When this database is being fed to us through infrared chips in our brains, people are still going to run into the line, Sylvester Stallone was considered for this lead role. Like, that's our legacy. I'm loving it. I think it's really great. So keep that up. But don't go crazy. Don't go in there and go, it was said that Peter Lorre grew a third penis so he could be in this movie. Like, don't do fake stuff.
Right. Exactly.
This is fake. But
the best lies have a little bit of rooted believability to them.
There you go. That's what I was trying to say. You said it better in way less words. It's a good job on that. Legitimately, though, I guess Judd Nelson was considered for this role. So that
well, is he? Was he, though?
Well, now you have to question everything, right?
Right, exactly.
Now this movie does not exist. That seems
cable, right? That seems, yeah.
I don't know. I said that, but then I'm I'm sitting here thinking Christian Slater. I could see him doing
I could totally see Christian Slater.
I could
Slater
see him doing something like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
This time.
I could see that, especially 88. Totally see that. It does, you know, and I'll give this movie one weird little credit. Didn't feel like 88. There were parts that did, like some of the music montage stuff and a few moments, but it didn't look like it was filmed in 88. I have a much different vision of what 88 films look like than this. So for whatever reason, good or bad, it didn't strike me as that.
I loved the music, and I love the city shots. Everything else was just crap, but the city shots and the music, oh my gosh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It pulled me along emotionally.
Yeah, and it was a dirty, I mean, 88 New York is pretty dirty, you know?
Right. Like, yeah, that's when we still had high crime, right?
Yeah, it was getting better.
Going on in New York.
It was getting better, but it wasn't, you know, we weren't gentrified and ridiculous yet, so we're still like, you know, kind of carrying that 70s stink with it, and it showed, like when they stopped at that gas station so that Farida Macondo Malinga Bagongo had to go inside to pee or whatever, but
come on now, Maria Conchita Alonso,
thank you, that's the one, and she went and talked to her brother, Mullet Man, the brother, and then
Mullet Man.
I remember just thinking, I would not go near that place, look how gross that is, that place looked like a really sketchy neighborhood, but Anyway, that was just
so. What was up with her family? I mean, was that just part of their culture in New York that they all lived to? I mean, I live in a very sparsely populated area where when you get 18, you move out of your house.
Yeah,
get out.
It's like East Indian families. They just stay together forever. It's grandma's in the basement. You're in the main floor, and right. Parents are upstairs. Like. I think that's.
Parents
I think there's
still
some
playing
of that.
The role of mom. Get up, you're going to work today. Get up.
I mean, I think it's just a growing up poor in a city. I think that's right. Probably common. You have shared space and that sort of thing. Who knows? But the movie never went full 80s like this. You know,
I thought they did a few times. Did they not?
It was close, but it wasn't quite
that.
Some
saxophone-ish and some.
Yeah. It just wasn't quite that, and that was good. I appreciated them for that.
For some reason, I was getting the music reminding me of like some Hitchcock films I had seen. And for some reason, I couldn't quite place.
Yeah, that same. It. You know when it was for me? It's when he was out in the street talking to nobody and it would cut back and forth to the psychiatrist. There was something about that's reminding me of some Hitchcocky
had a Cape
thing.
Fear kind of vibe to it, maybe. Yeah. And didn't quite place it.
Maybe.
It's around the edge.
Also, how would you like to die from a pallet piece of wood?
Oh, that looks like that'd be all kinds of splinters up in the.
There was a great, a great amount of inanimate objects that stymie Nicolas Cage's character, like trying to break a piece of wood off that pallet, trying to rip open the paper bag that contains the brand new plastic teeth he just bought, the napkin with the note. And just all the damage, of course, that he does to his apartment. I love the fact that, his greatest enemy isn't his mind. It's just these inanimate objects in his life that he has such a hard time interacting with.
And did he kill that lady at that bar? Did she die then?
Yeah, I think that was real. Yeah.
That was real.
Well,
what
was that, though? That confused me because I was like, wait, is this not supposed to be modern day? Why does it call it disco death? That was more of a rave. I didn't understand that headline at all.
Raves would come. I mean, it's still a disco. And I think
is it still a disco?
'88, I think.
Do we call them discos?
Nightclubs, I think, would be.
And I don't think he killed her.
Yeah. You don't think he killed her? You think that was all another allusion to himself?
I think he held her down and bit her really, really hard on the neck, and she passed out.
So you think just the newspaper headline was imaginary too?
I
don't know. I didn't think that all the way through.
right.
It does beg the question: how do you break through somebody's skin with those stupid plastic?
You don't. That's my point. Yeah. Like, I just think she just passed out, and like he's so like I don't know. Maybe she didn't exist. Maybe he's just maybe he went in there and bit a pillow, right? A vinyl pillow on this red couch.
Have you guys done that? Do you guys ever just like see how hard you can bite and you bite on the pillow? That was
I've never done that.
I have done that. It's like, I wonder how hard I could really bite. I mean,
what is happening right now? What are you talking about?
That's as far as I've gone. So you never heard pillow biter? Okay, whatever.
I've heard of a pillow biter, but that's a context that I can't imagine.
I have. How would it feel to bite as hard as I can? And a pillow is the right way to go.
I guess as a kid,
I'm not talking about like last night, Scott. I'm talking about when I was a kid.
Yeah, no. I mean, assumed you did, but what I mean is, like, I guess I had a couple of times where I would like, you're testing your might, as they would say.
Yeah, it's like if I had a bite of bully, how hard could I bite? Ooh, that pillow did not like that.
I could really hurt a guy.
The Wikipedia page says that he removed, and I don't remember seeing this, but the Wikipedia page, I guess, says he took the teeth out and he did
because he put them back in when he was done.
Her neck did have like multiple tooth marks. Like it wasn't the two piercings from a pair of fangs.
Yeah, she was all mauled up, sure. But isn't that the girl later in his dreamy psychiatrist talk where he claimed he'd raped somebody? Was it her he was talking about? Because that was weird.
He raped, I thought it was Maria Conchita Alonso. Yeah.
Oh!
You like the fact you can say that, don't you? Do it again.
Yeah, every chance I get.
You get her name right every time. But I don't.
Come on, Total Recall. Come on.
But when did But when did he do that? I don't remember that.
When he raped Alva and she tried to shoot him with the blanks, and then he.
No, I remember that.
But
he didn't rape her. He just.
Well, the scene ended, but we assumed he raped her because.
Oh. Really?
She assumed he raped her.
Right.
She did.
Oh.
I don't know that. I don't know that we ever saw anything that would give us that issue.
If someone rips your shirt open and then bites you on the neck, I consider that not necessarily assault.
Of course. No, absolutely, of course. But the movie was depicting a woman waking up from a sexual assault and fearing the worst. It didn't actually show he's so bad at everything he does, right? Like there's no reason for the
she passes out from shock. She doesn't know what happened. When she was unconscious.
All I know is, I mean, at the end of the day, I guess what I'm saying is the movie is so tonally everywhere that it doesn't know. It never quite knows what it is. And I actually think it works in its favor. It leaves you very discordant. It's like, oh, really?
Right.
Yeah.
You're supposed to feel uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
And I better throw out a correction because I know I'm already going to get a lot of hate mail from not liking Forrest Gump and for thinking that, maybe the vampire stuff was kind of real. But now I'm going to get an email from people saying, no, Maria Conchita Alonso was in Running Man, not in Total Recall.
Oh, right. It was Running Man. You're right. No, it was Running Man.
Oh, no. What do you think? All Hispanic women look alike, right?
No, now? I thought she was in both. I thought we've had this discussion before.
Well, what was she in? What would she have been in? In Total Recall, there's no character like her that I know of.
There? Yeah, there's the one that the woman that helps him is shoot, what is her name?
Right, it was the Running Man.
Flambe boy LeConte. I don't know her name.
Flambe Rachel Ticotin. She's the partner. She's the Hispanic woman.
Yeah, she is.
All right.
Yeah, you're right. I was getting the two confused.
All right, here's what's funny. I wrote. Sometimes I write notes and I don't remember what I was thinking when I wrote them. But I wrote, here are my two favorite things I wrote that I don't remember. I wrote, worst Nick Cage movie? Likely. The B one is pretty bad, though. I wrote that. Early, though. That was early. By the end, I think it's not as bad as this. But anyway, and then I wrote, is it a movie about becoming a vampire or a movie about treating your secretary like shit? Right. Because they just kept pounding that into me. It's like,
they called it a subplot, but I feel like that was... the price.
He is so horrendous to her. Like, it is the total Svengali or Machiavellian coax them in and say, I'm sorry, I was so mean. And forgive me, Arkay. Now I'm going to be mean again.
Yeah. And it was immediate. Yeah. It was so quick. Fun. He would apologize. 2 seconds later, you're going to get fired. And then you start gagging for no reason. And
abusive relationships, right?
Yeah, that's, I guess. Yeah.
You think, it's going to get better. It's going to get better. Nope.
Well, it just also, I just didn't understand what the point of it was. Like, it just never went anywhere. Like, is it just to make her life miserable? What's the end game? There's no end game with her.
To set up the brother finally killing him.
Oh, right. I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, she could have just shot him. She should have shot him. Shooting four bullets into the ground like it's going to make a difference after the first one. Come on, just shoot him.
I think it would have been better if she had to kill him. I think that would have been a better ending.
Yeah, but it was also...
Well, not with blanks.
It's all
she could also... Point. Just about anybody could have hammered that stake in. I mean, come on.
See, I forgot for a second he had blanks, too, now that you said that. Yeah. But so, when he helps hammer that thing in, where he's like, here, come here, help me push it in, and he goes over to push it into his chest.
That's so painful.
That caught me all off guard. Like, I didn't expect it. I didn't think he was going to die in the end of this thing. Mm-hmm. It's a weird movie, dude.
It is it's weird it's that so you were weird. Trying to come up with, is this his worst movie? Because he's got some real bad movies. Like, but at the same time, I genuinely think The Wicker Man is a better movie than this.
Yeah.
And so like right there, I've got to be in his bottom five. Right. I don't know. Like, I've never seen the 2014 Left Behind, but
right.
Could it be this bad? Like, how could it be this bad?
Wow. So good, bad is such a loose interpretation. It's like saying I want to be happy, and then someone will say, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, I am always entertained by Nicolas Cage, so I can't say that any movie is bad.
Yes, you can. You can. No, yeah, absolutely, you can.
I've never not been entertained by a Nicolas Cage movie, though.
You can easily say, though, like we saw Season of the Witch. Remember how bad that was? That was really bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I was still entertained.
Were you, though?
I twerk.
Imagine,
Imagine were you entertained? Were you entertained in the way that the director intended? I think that's probably where the good bad.
There you go. Because
we were entertained by Troll too.
Yeah,
we were entertained in the way that they meant.
Right. So that's like calling your shot. You're saying that the director did not call that shot.
Right. Yeah. Right. They didn't call that shot. All right. Yeah. I'm going to tell you. According to Taste of Cinema, this is their worst. The top 10 worst Nicolas Cage movies. Let's see if we agree with these. And a lot of these I've never seen or heard of. But
here. Right, that's the problem. He made a bunch of movies we've never seen or heard
of. Yeah, and there's in 2011 in particular, there's a real run. So in 2011, there was a movie they're calling the 10th worst called Seeking Justice. Then number 9, a movie in 2011 again, Drive Angry. Also from 2011, Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance.
Now, is Drive Angry the one where he comes back from hell to get...
Yes.
To get vengeance on the person who killed him or something. I know that sounds like Ghost Rider too, but
it says here it is. Not by any means boring. Let's see.
I found enjoyment in all of
well, those of course films. You have, because you're a positive dude and you're better and the world's better for it. But this stuff sucks.
Yeah, here it is. Yeah, Drive Angry. A vengeful father escapes from hell and chases after the men who killed his daughter and kidnapped his granddaughter.
Yeah, and it says here, less of a film and more of a vulgarity fest of unnecessary gore, kitchen nudity. Hey, we should watch Drive
Angry.
Kitchen
nudity. Yeah,
we should watch
it. I don't remember that.
It sounds like nudity. Mandy based on that description. I haven't seen Mandy either.
It wasn't kitchen nudity.
Mandy with Schwarzenegger?
Kitch and nudity.
Mandy was with Nicolas Cage.
It is.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it on Shudder when I did my Shudder trial or whatever. I watched that thing. That is something else. I don't even know how to describe it, but I'm not going to call it a bad movie because it's actually very good, but it's also just psycho. It's the most psycho thing I've seen in years. I've never seen a movie quite like that. Anyway, at number seven, they give it to Tokarev in 2014, whatever that is. Season of the Witch, 2011. And then the final five, Pay the Ghost from 2015.
Never saw that one.
Outcast from 2014. Deadfall from 93. Don't know what that is.
No.
The Wicker Man from 06 at the number two spot. And number one, Left Behind.
Yeah.
They don't even have Kiss of the Vampire.
It's not even the list.
Yeah.
I think that for a list, you know, for somebody making a list like this, they have to have grossed. It has to have a box office number higher than $1 million.
It's
like
also
have to have made $1 million.
This list is wildly weighted toward recent things, and I mean, he's made really bad recent things. But Vampire's Kiss is 30 years old.
Yeah.
And it's really really hard to fathom how bad it is because you have to put it into its own context. Mm-hmm. And like you just go, oh well, 30 years ago they made shitty movies like this, and you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So like you just can't. It's stunning how bad it is, guys.
The problem,
stunning.
The problem I would have with, say, Left Behind movie, and the reason I don't even want to watch it here, is because that thing is couched in religious crap. And my problem with it is I don't have a problem with religion or people's beliefs. I have a problem when they put it in movie form and jam it down everybody's throat, and then put on top of that an aging Nicolas Cage trying to make sense of it all. Like, come on. What are you doing to me? Right. Don't do that to
me. By the way, it was Maggie I was thinking of, not Mandy.
Mandy
that's where his daughter gets, you know, starting to become a vampire.
Yeah.
Well, no way.
Not
really?
A vampire. I'm sorry, a zombie.
Yeah.
Zombie. She had like have you seen that, Maggie? That's really good.
Yeah, that's actually good.
I haven't even heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Maggie's actually very good. Maggie. Yeah, that's a good movie, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some in there. See, that's the thing. And that's in that period of where he was just making junk after junk after junk, but once in a while, one would show up, and you'd be like, oh, this is good. This is all right. What you got here? I don't know whose mic that is. Do you guys hear that again?
Yeah. Who is that?
I don't know.
It must be me, because I'm not hearing anything. So
we can see who's buzzing.
Well, here.
Or whose light is green when
how about this? Is this it? Is this it?
Maybe.
We don't know.
Well, doesn't happen when you tap. Like, nobody say anything for 2 seconds.
Okay. Yeah, it's done away.
Yeah,
what's it doing?
I don't know. It's just like a
hum buzz,
and it keeps kind of coming and going, like you got a proximity to a power supply kind of thing going on. You know, like when your cable's
too close.
Yeah,
could you maybe not use your beard trimmer while we're doing the show?
I was thinking more of another device, but I won't say what I thought it was.
A vibrator.
Oh!
I'll say what it was.
There you go. All right, well, we've come to the point of the show where I get to play clips. I enjoy this part of the show because it's a good time.
How about now?
And, it's much better, Brian. It's gone now. I don't hear it.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Whatever that was. It must have had something near something. Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, you guys like to do things for keeps? How about having Keeps do something for you? Keeps makes things easy and affordable when it comes to hair loss treatment for men. So, losing hair sucks. You know it does. I know it does. I mean, I've done okay, but I know some people are like, man, if I could get some of this hair back, that'd be cool. Two out of three guys will experience hair loss by the time they're 35, some much earlier. Luckily, thanks to today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can help treat the symptoms of hair loss. To get started, all you have to do is go to Keeps website online to get your medical attention, a discreet drug delivery from the comfort and privacy of your own home. No more going to that doctor's office. No more waiting in lines. Keeps treatments start at just $10 a month. So I want you guys to try it. Get some of that hair back. To receive your first month of treatment for free, go to keeps.com/filmsack. That's KEEPS.com/filmsack. And check it out today. Sound clips, here you go. Let's start this one with one of those dumb laughs we were talking about. So here's Nicolas Cage laughing. Oh, gosh.
It's just, it's fake. But, like, of course it's fake. He's acting. But then you're like, wait, is he acting fake or is he just bad? Like, I don't know.
Is that a Peter Lowe affectation or is that a Nicolas Cage affectation?
Yeah, it's pretty deep. Okay, here's him doing that bad accent pretty early in the movie. Here you go.
But I am asking you to go through the entire Der Spiegel file because that is a very fat file and nothing is in order and it will take hours, but it will be there.
I don't know what he's doing.
Slipping in and out.
I mean, at least, like, you know, everyone makes fun of Star Wars and Princess Leia going from English accent to not. And but at least she did it. Like, it was in a scene where she did it, she would hold it the whole scene. And then another scene, it would be gone. But he is slipping in and out of it in real time.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Whereas one is your natural language that you're accidentally slipping into. This is something that's just weird.
It's bad. It makes me sad.
Pennsylvanian? I don't. What is?
Well, Pennsylvania is where the American vampires are. Think of that.
True story. Mm-hmm.
Here's more of that accent.
Nothing. It's I was remembering. I brought this girl up to my place the other night.
Dude.
It's really hot, you know. And we're on the bed. And suddenly this bat comes swooping down out of nowhere.
A bat?
Yeah, a bat.
A bat.
You know, a bat. The way she seems so incredulous about it. She's like, a bat?
We don't have those in New York.
That doesn't make sense. All right, sorry. Here's a... I don't know what this is, so I'll play it.
Alva, I told you that I already checked those files. I already checked them.
Oh, I already checked them. You know what? Get a better mic. Seriously. He's got like some room mic. It's awful.
It occurs to me, Scott, that at this moment, about 95% of the audience for FilmSack are hearing this for the first time. They're hearing what he sounds like in this movie.
Yeah.
And I just feel like we need to stop and say, this is actually what he sounds like. Scott did not pick the only parts of the film where he sounds like this.
No.
He sounds like this throughout the movie.
Yeah,
I just want you to know that.
Yeah, I could have recorded like everything, but we don't have time for that. But you're right. These are just samplings of that same shit, and he does it the whole movie. It's insane. All right, here's the Best in Show guy. He wasn't there for very long, but you'll recognize his voice.
No, I don't save the same amount I put in the other account. Now, say I put $2,000 in the IRA. Now, that doesn't mean I'm going to save $2,000 at income tax time. It's more like $700.
He's very young in this, but
he is.
He's great. I love that guy in the rest of the
I mean, he's 25.
Yeah.
John Michael Higgins.
He's pretty young.
So in that moment, I'm just like, I wish he had the lead. I would love to see him in the lead over this.
Yeah. The way I look at 25-year-olds is they were 15 just 10 years ago. That's how I look at it.
Okay.
Here's another way to look at 25-year-olds. You're twice as old as a 25-year-old.
Wait, I don't want to think of it that way. I'm too Michael Higgins, or he's older than me, so he's more than that even now.
He's all over Harvey Birdman. If you ever,
oh yeah, he's great on there.
Want to find his voice? He's the voice of many things.
A person born when you were 25 is now 25 themselves.
Yep, think of that. Yep, the day. Oh, that's crazy. You know I don't deal with these things very well.
I know. That's why I'm twisting.
He's also excellent in a million other things. That guy's great. Arrested Development season had him in there a bunch. He was great. He's great. We love that guy.
All right.
This is that terrible. He was bad at, like, I'm up in the morning and I got my coffee and I'm singing a song as I run around the house. He's bad at that. And so here's an example of that. What is diggy diggy diggy? What is that?
I don't know. I think that's from Kid Rock, isn't it? Bum but diggy diggy up jump the boogie, something. I don't know.
In the boogie. I got a tiny guy on stage. Yeah. All right, here's Nick Cage, and he doesn't remember.
I don't really know what you're talking about. I don't remember.
Okay. All right, buddy. He's just hamming it up.
Really?
Yeah. Here's Brian Ibbett most of the day.
I guess I was pretty horny.
Uh-huh. Yeah. here's
horny.
There's even more.
I was a little drunk. Plus I was horny.
That's the one, yeah. Plus I was horny.
Plus, that's some good math there. Plus, I was horny. All right. It's the, what? Oh, is this the worst it's ever been? I wrote, and I don't remember if that's in context to what he says here, or is this me asking about this movie? I don't know which, but here it is.
I'm sure he is calling about the Der Spiegel contract, which he still hasn't gotten a copy of. How do I know he hasn't gotten a copy of it? Because I haven't sent it to him. Why haven't I sent it to him? Because you haven't found it and brought it to me yet. Now it's Tuesday, and I still don't see it here on my desk. I don't see it here. Do you?
Yeah, it's me asking, has it ever gotten any worse than that? And I think that's the worst it's ever been. Flash Dance Lady says some words. Here's her.
He is wondering, how did she get in here? And he is realizing that he let her in, as she is his lover, his most passionate mistress. And he is realizing that she is a jealous mistress.
She is wondering, does he have an epilady she could borrow for her hairy pits?
Nair. Just a jar.
Anything really. I'll even take a man's razor at this point. Whatever he has, she will take it.
You know, she's a maniac.
She really is. Randy, that like was that very one.
Good. Yeah. Thank you. You got me.
Yeah. This is all the Alvas. I may have edited this for time, but
oh, nice.
There's a lot of these. Yeah, I don't know why he knows what this is. So here you go. I'll play it.
Alva.
Simon and Theodore. Dude.
Nice one. All right. Older lady in the bathroom freaking me out says this.
What the f*** is going on?
All right. Now, this needs some context because they're in there having this confrontation. She's brandishing scissors at Nick Cage. And they're in the ladies' room. And the old lady is just sort of nonchalantly washing her hands, doing her thing, acting like this is no big deal until she says that line I just played. But as she says it, she stares at the camera.
She walks by the camera and stares right at it. Right. It's so weird.
And nobody has the forethought to say, you know what, maybe let's do another take where she isn't looking directly at the camera.
Or was that on purpose? Was that her talking to us and asking us what the F is going on? Like, this movie
in
is
this
playing-
movie. She's asking about the movie that she is trapped in.
They're messing with me. This movie messed with me. I'm kind of mad
she
about
wasn't
it. She
was actually
also-
an actress. They just filmed in that room.
She really was going to the bathroom.
Yeah. What the F is that? She looked at the camera for real because she was like, why are you
here? Are
y'all
filming something? Yeah. Are y'all filming a documentary?
All right. Here's all the yeps. So here's a bunch of yeps.
Yep.
All right. Jeez Louises. Also, this is no more proof he doesn't know any songs.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-
What is he doing?
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Did they just say, hey, Nick, go in there, be in the shower, and just come up with something?
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably did. All right, here he is giggling. Okay.
Wow.
And then, I don't know what this is.
The work's not just going to go away, Alva. It never just goes away.
Okay. All right. Yeah, this is the worst movie he's ever made. Come on.
It's
when he says go.
I'm like, okay, so this is half Mid-Atlantic, half Valley Girl,
yeah,
right?
Valley
like,
Girl is what I wrote down. I wrote down the actual phrase, helly shit. Because at one point he says that. And that was the only way that I could actually document how dumb the accent was. Helly shit.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very, was he in Valley Girl? Or do I have that wrong in
yes,
my head?
Yes.
He was in that. Okay.
It was before this. I think it was like after Fast Times at Ridgemont High, before Raising Arizona or Peggy Sue Got Married, yeah, or any of that.
That sounds right. Okay. Something about some files.
That goddamn contract is somewhere in those goddamn files!
Oh, jeez. You know how loud that'd be in a little cab like that?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be pissed. Let me out here, driver.
That's why I stopped driving for Lyft.
Yeah.
Every day. Every day.
Here he is again, being all surprised about something.
Oh, God, where am I?
Like you're in the risk room.
Oh, right. Yeah, this is when he's looking in the mirror, and we can all see him in the mirror, yeah. And he apparently thinks he can't see himself in the mirror.
Which, again, leads me to think everything's in his head, like all of it. And then the guy behind him who's pooping says this.
I'm trying to take a dump.
the guy in the bathroom, I really wish that the microphone was better in there, because the guy in the stall talks for about 30 seconds as he's walking out, and I really wanted to hear what he was saying, but it was so echoey that it was impossible to understand.
Sound design in this movie was less than great. Here's Nick Cage with weird breathing. All right, there's that. It's a nice short one. Here's a he's a vampire moment.
I'm a vampire.
It's like a siren as it goes by.
Right, exactly. I'm a vampire.
It has like a Doppler effect to it.
Right.
Like a train going by.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Nick Cage says Bahoo. All right.
Says that several times.
Yeah.
Yeah. We actually get a boo-hoo, but it's boo.
I don't get it. There's nothing there. What did that even mean? Was it him saying, oh, this gun didn't work, or what was the deal?
I find it really funny to just, again, to underline for those of you who haven't seen this movie, he says that several times. Yeah. Scott did not just get the one ridiculous time that he goes, bahoo.
Yeah, it was like three times, and it did it with big long pauses in between. And it sounds almost like a sneeze. I don't know what it was supposed to be.
I think somebody wrote down, all right, so your character's crying because they're realizing that, you know, they can't kill themselves because they're a vampire and they have to get a wooden stake in the heart. So, you know, crying stuff, I don't know, wah, boo-hoo, that sort of thing. Okay, yeah, boo-hoo, boo-hoo. Yeah, I got this. Go, start guys. Rolling. Take one.
Sure, one thing about a little longer.
Oh, my God.
That's a take. Break, everybody. Take.
Let's move on. Next scene.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, you do a good Nick Cage. I know you think it drifts into other people, but it's pretty good. All right, you are what? Oh, this is another dumb. I think I played this at the top of the show too.
You are with me.
No one talks like that, dude. No, no one.
Yeah.
All right, here's the old barf and hide. And then he hides under the couch.
Sounds like he pukes up a glass lamp.
So bad. I was sure we were going to get somebody barfing in this movie. It never happened, though.
No.
No.
Lots of retching.
Yeah, no retching, no barfing.
No production.
That's what we say. It is time, ladies and gentlemen, for this right here. Just handed to me. This is the Film Sack checklist. The first on here is Worse Than Wicker Man. Check. I think we can say that pretty safely. Mm-hmm. Maria Conchita, I Want to Never-O Worko with Nick O'Cajo again-o. Check. And then finally, this gun tastes better than cockroach. Check. All right, so there's that. Hey, moving on to Star Trek connections. We do have one. And by the way, as we are at this point of the show, a shout out and some rest in peace for the actor that played Nog, or excuse me, Nog? Yeah.
Yeah.
On Deep Space Nine, passed away yesterday, and
no.
He had a lot of long-standing health issues. Born with one kidney, which I never knew about. He had a transplant at 14, had another one at 47, but just passed away. Apparently, according to everybody you read, like every Star Trek actor that ever worked with the guy, sounds like the single nicest human being they ever encountered in their time on that show or in Star Trek stuff. So, anyway, shout out to him. It's very, very sad.
Yeah, I when I went and looked last night at his Wikipedia article, I was sad because people were vandalizing it. And it's just like, listen, no,
doing that.
You're a bad person. If you're vandalizing Aaron Eisenberg's Wikipedia article the day he dies, you're a bad person. And you need
you're
to
garbage
go away.
Bag of a person.
Yeah, you're bad people. He was only 50. Apparently it was complications of this lifelong stuff he'd dealt with. And I don't know, he just sounded like the nicest dude. So even if Nog annoyed you. I actually kind of like Nog on DS9 after a while. He grew on me. Shout out to that dude. Well, anyway, this show or this movie's got some connections, at least one that Daryl could find. Jerry Rector. He played Larry.
Rector. Damn near killed her.
Yep. Nice.
Gotta do it.
TNG played one of a pair of abducting aliens along with his identical twin brother, Jeff Rector, in the third season episode Allegiance in 1990. Jeff Rector and then Jerry Rector.
Jeff Rector is such a great name. You have to keep saying it out loud.
Jeff Rector.
I can't stop.
It's a good name. It's got very alliterative or very not alliterative. What do you call that when the name just flows really well? It just sounds good. There's a word for that.
Sounds good.
It's not alliterative because that's like it would be if like it was
good name.
Jeff Jiffy or something or Jeff.
Right. Oh, it's not alliterative. No.
No. Yeah, I don't know what you call it. But Jeff Rector, the adventures of Jeff
Rector. It's onomatopoeia because it sounds exactly like what it does.
Yeah, very well done. soundtrack, great. I give it a T for terrible. It was not memorable and kind of bad and all over the place. Not a great soundtrack. Twitter post, this is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. And as is tradition, we start with Randy.
Vampire's Kiss. I have too much respect for my friend and co-host, Brian J. Ibbett, to even facetiously compare the weekly orgies at his house to this pile of crap. Let that be a lesson to you, Nick Cage. You're not even welcome in my joke. Good day, sir. I said good day.
Wow. That's intense. Intense. Speaking of intense, Brian Dunaway.
Oh, Vampire's Kiss, like storming out of the greasy spoon and your vampire bite suddenly starts hurting, but it's okay because there's dancing mimes outside your high-rise apartment complex spitting and slapping each other. Were you not entertained?
By the way, were they really slapping? Because it made a sound. I guess they were slapping.
Yeah, okay. They're not good mimes. You're supposed to mime that.
Terrible mimes.
They're not supposed to be actual full body contact on mimes. They're supposed to
a beautiful mime.
Yeah. Or any kind of Foley work. None of that. You're not allowed. Did you go to mime school? What the hell? All right. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Vampire's Kiss. Nicolas Cage is bitten by an asshole vampire and slowly starts to become an asshole himself. Yeah. Vampasties.
Yeah, nice. That's I don't feel like we fully talked about how this movie doesn't care to get things right. Like it doesn't
right.
Like that was the hardest thing for me. Like even like with his accent and whatever, like I could go with okay, there were decisions made.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the stickers on what's her name's breasts or
Jennifer Beals.
The Band-Aids.
Jennifer Beals. There were so many things where I'm like, oh, why didn't they get another take? Why didn't they look at their dailies and go, oh, we didn't get that right? Like clearly visible.
Not only did they not do it, they decided to use it twice in the movie.
Right. The same scene. As though it happened differently the second time, but he's wearing the same boxers. And you're just like, come on, guys.
Yeah, I forgot about that. They totally repeated that, didn't they?
Yeah. Maybe her character is just really shy, and in addition to wearing a shirt and a bra, she also has, she's very self-conscious about her nipples, so she just 24/7 wears pasties.
But in his imagination is what you're saying, right?
I think that maybe even though she wasn't a vampire, maybe he did take her home.
I love this. I don't think so, because remember when he went back in the morning? Remember that morning, he came in there with that coffee to hand it to her, and there was nothing in the bed. And he's like holding it there as if somebody's there and like shaking and stuff. I think she was never there.
Yeah, she's never there.
Yeah.
I can't believe I didn't get Vampire's Kiss. Of all the movies to not get.
I don't know. They really messed with our minds this time.
Messed with our minds.
All right. Well, now this. These are alternate titles. These were just handed to me as well. And these are almost the titles. They didn't quite make the cut. They went with Vampire's Kiss. But originally it was going to be called Change Your Freaking Vampire Neck Band-Aid Already. That was almost a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That was nasty. Second grossest thing in the movie for me was it not changing that. And finally, Break That Rusty Cage and Run. Get it?
Yes.
That reminds me, by the way, Chris Cornell, who sadly took his own life a year ago or so, his daughter, 15-year-old daughter, just released a single from an album that he and her were producing. And it's really good.
I hadn't heard about this.
You should check it out. But it's like you can hear that strong. You know how there was strength in his voice when he would sing.
Yeah,
like, you can hear it in her, and it's not like it doesn't sound like her dad, but you can just hear that like whatever that is.
It was good. It was good. They got a chance to see. That's what he should have lived for.
I agree. Finish that album with your daughter. Don't go out yet. I miss Cornell's voice, man. That guy.
Yeah.
Something else. Anyway, there's a little side note, another sad note. Jeez, between that and Star Trek, I got all the sad stuff today. Mm-hmm. All right, quick email from a listener who wrote in to filmsack@gmail.com to finish us out today. This is from Aaron, who says, Aloha, Scott, Randy, Brian, and Brian. Oh, he's taking your line there, Randy. Getting a little Hawaii up in there. During your sacking of Rocky III, Ibbett asked how realistic it was that Hulk Hogan's character had the gimmick of Thunderlips the Ultimate Male, since it wasn't menacing like Andre the Giant or The Undertaker. There's a long history of pro wrestlers using a ladies' man type gimmick, or on the opposite spectrum, where a male is portrayed as somewhat effeminate. A few examples of this be adorable Adrian Adonis, or ravishing Rick Rude, or Nature Boy Ric Flair, the model Rick Martin, or Martel rather, and the Heartbreak Kid Shawn Michaels. There is even an old Bugs Bunny cartoon from 1951 entitled Bugs Hugged, where Bugs is the mascot for a wrestler named Ravishing Ronald, who comes out and is showered with flowers and perfume. Bugs ends up having to wrestle in his place, but that's not pertinent here. Anyway, thanks for all you guys do to introduce me to these movies I would otherwise never have watched or heard of, and for being the perfect soundtrack to my commute, Aaron.
No.
Well, you're welcome, Aaron, but also he's right. And I'd forgotten.
Yeah, I love that Bugs Bunny tune, by the way.
Yeah, it was really good.
Thunderlips was a, you know, women are going to say, oh, you know, I want to be with a guy whose nickname is Thunderlips.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was called that because he would do this.
He was really good at the motorboat.
Yeah.
Right.
He could motorboat like nobody else. But real quick, that Bugs Bunny cartoon, which I agree Dunaway is awesome. It's one of my favorites.
Love it.
Chuck Jones joint. And that guy just had his 107th birthday. If he was alive, he would have been 107.
Wow.
If he was alive, he'd like kill me.
Yeah. He'd be like, someone end it now.
Drive a stake.
Man,
I'm a zombie.
Everything he did, I loved.
Yeah, I love Chuck Jones. Boy, his books are great, too.
Yeah.
Reading about his life.
He's amazing. There needs to be a proper... Is there a proper documentary I've just never seen? Because I would love...
I've seen a few documentaries, but they're... I wouldn't say they're proper. They're more like...
It's a couple improper ones.
Yeah. They deal a lot with the termite terror. They deal with other stuff.
Yeah.
But Chuck Jones is in there, so...
Chuck Jones is so good. Anyway, if you don't know who we're talking about, go Google him. That's your email this week. Filmsack@gmail.com is where it came. Next week, we are watching Creepshow 2. Oh, my gosh.
Creepy show. We're hanging out on Amazon Prime.
Have we never seen Creepshow 1, though? Have we done that?
I thought we did see Creepshow 1, no?
We're about to find out. I thought we saw
the other anthology, not the Creepshow series. Not the Creepshow
Tales from the Dark Side?
Did we see that one? I don't think we saw that one either.
Creepshow so far not showing up on the new feed. Let's check the old feed.
Okay.
Creepshow. Yeah, we have never done Creepshow.
Make sure you get Vampire's Kiss in before October the 2nd. It's leaving Prime very soon.
That's right.
Yeah, the good news about Creepshow 2, you don't need to have seen Creepshow 1 to understand what's going on.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Good.
It's kind of like the Rocky movies. We've been going backwards.
Right. We're going to watch them in reverse order.
Yeah. So Creepshow 1 had Stephen King in a bit role, didn't he? He was all like a chia pet at the end or something. Do I have that memory right? Where you get... grew a bunch of...
Yes. He got moldy because he touched a bad meteor.
That's what it was. So this one is not that one then. I'm just trying to separate
them in
my head.
This one is not that one.
Mm-hmm. Is this the one with the cigarette smoking thing? Like, where, I'm trying to remember.
Oh, I don't remember. It's been so long. I've seen both movies, but I just don't remember. Yeah, they all blur together.
Getting them mixed up.
For some reason, I'm putting things in my head that are totally Crypt Keeper stuff that has nothing to do with this, but I still do that. Anyway, that's going to be next week. It's a little nice little early preview of our Halloween month.
We're getting started on our Sacktober early with Vampire's Kiss and Creepshow 2. And looking at the movies we've got for Sacktober, a couple of the most famous, well-known horror movies of all time this year. I don't want to spoil it yet. But we have a way of jinxing these things. But I'm really, really excited about this year, guys. We're gonna see some great stuff.
Yeah, and it's our 10-year anniversary in October. So celebrate with us, folks. We'll do something special. I don't know what yet, but something cool. Watch for that. And next week again, Creepshow. Creepshow 2 is on Prime, is it?
Amazon Prime.
Yep. We're making you use all your Prime so that if you sign up for a free month of Prime, you can use it all up right now with Vampire's Kiss and Creepshow 2.
Yep. So go watch
that. And then we're going to sack the marvelous Miss Maisel.
Oh, good Lord.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see that new weird animated thing they got on there. Do you see that weird thing with, it's got Saul on it from Better Call Saul and a bunch of other people I know. But anyway, it's animated, but it looks like real people. You guys seen this?
No.
Can we all throw out if you are trying out Amazon Prime for the first time, you need to watch this thing. Like, what's your thing?
Oh,
like,
on Prime?
What's your thing? Name a thing.
Man in the High Castle. I'd watch that.
Good one.
The Boys.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Yeah. Ibbot just stole mine.
Oh, sorry. All right.
Dunaway, do you have any?
No, I don't subscribe to Amazon Prime except when you make me.
I think Justified is still on there. Watch Justified. That's a great show.
Yeah. I've seen Justified.
A great reason to have Amazon Prime.
At least the first season of Bosch. We've enjoyed a lot of Bosch, but I think the first season is a must.
Yeah, the first season is the best of Bosch, but it's all good. But I think you're right.
Neil Gaiman?
Good Omens. Good Omens is fantastic.
Good Omens. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Loved that. There's a lot of great original Prime stuff. It's funny Randy brought up the one thing that's not Prime original. It's just an FX show that ended up on Prime.
That's on Prime. Justified.
Well, it's there, but it's not an original. It's like a FX did it. So you got to come up with give us a Prime original, Randy. What do you got? You got to give us one. You got to have one.
And The Boys is so good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Carl Urban. Guys, he's so good. Freaking good.
It's really good.
What am I going to go with?
There's lots of good stuff. You could do the marvelous Miss Maisel.
What about the new one with the?
I like Patriot a lot. I like Patriot.
Oh right, and the Bodyguard was. Oh no, it was Bodyguard Netflix?
No, Bodyguard's Netflix. Fleabag's supposed to be good. I haven't seen it yet.
Fleabag. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Everybody's been telling about Fleabag.
Everyone's raving about Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, Catastrophe's supposed to be very funny.
Homecoming is good. That one's Amazon Prime with Julia Roberts.
Oh yeah, that's supposed to be very good. Mm-hmm. I didn't see
we
that.
Enjoyed
one.
It.
When Mississippi is very funny. If you liked Kig Notaro at all, that's a very funny
one.
Comedy.
Mississippi. That is a great, great recommendation.
First, yes. I think that's your pick. If I was to make a secondary one, I would say the first season of Goliath. And then you can wonder in dismay why season two is so freaking weird.
Because
one was amazing. And there were parts of two where you were like, oh, okay, we're good here with season two. And then it went off the rails, man. What happened with that show? Bums me out because what's his name? Bill Bob Thornton's really good in it.
I'll tell you something you might not have noticed on Amazon Prime and you should all go watch is called The New Yorker Presents.
Oh, right.
It is just a series of like mini documentaries and interviews, and it's all based on things that have been in The New Yorker. It's really good.
They have a very good podcast as well that's basically that, but in audio form. And I haven't seen the video version, but I'm sure it's as good. Those guys make really good stuff.
Can we just take a minute for the loss of The Boys? Just a minute, like
sure.
Brian Ibbett, like what's the like what got you? What about The Boys is like just like oh this was so great.
Just the unexpected turns in there. Like I don't want to spoil anything, but characters. You know, you kind of know that these guys are kind of jerks going into this, and depth of characters for ones that could be two-dimensional, like the Aquaman equivalent, like the Deep, and like the Wonder Woman equivalent. Is it, no, what's her name?
Queen Ashara.
Oh no, Queen, my team accidentally killed one of the cast one members.
You killed one of the seven. Yes. No, yeah. Queen Maeve.
That's right.
Yeah,
They're just well-written, deep characters that I feel like this is what Watchmen, the movie Watchmen, tried to be. And didn't succeed.
Well, in some ways, The Boys is a very depressing read. I don't like it as a comic. I think it's...
Oh, I never read it.
It's just kind of mean and kind of awful to itself. Mm-hmm. I think the show is almost like, hey guys, what if we kind of circumvented? Well, you know, we're never going to get the rights to Watchmen. HBO has that. Why don't we just see what our take would be? We'll use The Boys as the basis, and they've succeeded. It's very, very good.
Oh, yeah, because you get tone and you're able to say this is a dark comedy, and actually have the dark comedy in there. In the comic, you can't get the tone. It may never occur to you that some of these things are crazy and that makes them funny.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Oh my God.
It's really good. It's really good. It's not for the kids, though. No kids, everybody.
No. Oh, this is hard R stuff. Like, You're gonna figure that out in the very first couple of minutes when Huey's girlfriend gets killed by A-Train. Whew.
Oh yeah, that was when I knew. Yeah. I was in for it. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay, that's mm-hmm. where this is going. All right,
yeah,
buckle
did
in.
That happen?
Oh yeah, really the first couple of minutes. Don't worry, Brian. We did not spoil
it's
anything.
It's not a spoiler. Yeah. No.
There goes the only thing I was looking forward to watching. Only
no.
Let's just say you need to
watch this. Please watch this. If for nothing else. There is a young actor named Anthony Starr who is not, he's just not the most useful actor. I can't imagine him finding like crazy awesome roles. But as Homelander in this show, he is phenomenal. I want him to win an Emmy.
Oh, he should win an Emmy. He's incredible in this. Mm-hmm. And he is, oh man, I hate Homelander. Guy got under my skin like no character in TV.
Yeah. That's
smarmy.
Yeah.
Such a bastard. I hear that guy.
By the way,
I hear he's really good on that other. There's some Cinemax original he was good on that wasn't
American Gothic?
No. Shit.
Okay.
He
was also in a show called Banshee.
Banshee, that's it. Banshee's okay. Supposed to be good. Hmm. Yeah.
Hmm. He's a basic white guy and it's really hard for him to distinguish himself. But in The Boys, wow.
Yeah. No, he found his role. He's really good at it. Dunaway, you were going to say something. Cut you off.
Oh, by the way, I was going to say, I do give Randy a hard time about the Prime. I'm fine with watching the Prime and getting the Prime. I think it's Randy's insistence that I get the Prime that I'm like, I'm not going to enjoy it. No, sir. Nope.
Yeah.
Nope.
You just want to be disagreeable in kind of a fun way. Yeah. I get it.
Right. It's for fun.
Yeah.
I am fine with Amazon Prime.
Yeah. Prime's great. Especially if you already have it. It's, you know, it's a thing and it's there and you should use it.
Right.
All right, that's gonna do it for today's show. Thank you all for joining us. Be back here next time for our coverage of the fine 80s epic what's it called again? Forgot.
Creepshow 2.
A little bit of anthology horror for you next week right here on FilmSack. In the meantime, filmsack.com is our website. You're encouraged to go there on the frequent and check out whatever you need. You can find links to everything. You can send us voicemails at 801-471-0462, and filmsack@gmail.com remains our email address. You can find us on Twitter at FilmSack and leave us reviews wherever you get your podcasts. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
I'm a vampire!
We'll see you next time.
Goes to set multiple times.
Yeah.
Too late.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.